All right, hello everyone, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock, and I am joined by my longtime friend, Michael Salfino. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Very good, man. This is exciting. Happy to be on the pod.
So the idea for this podcast was I just wanted to talk about some guys that sort of, even regardless of getting a good price on them, that we just don't really want to draft this year. So, and I think that is important. I think that figuring out guys, even being a little, even being price agnostic, that you just don't want to have on your team. And one of your big theories is just don't draft guys on bad offenses. Is that sort of what guided your list?
Not necessarily. I mean, actually that wasn't really the operative thing with the list that I came up with. That's something that I guess that, I generally don't do anyway, unless like the ADP value I think is like ridiculous. Like, in other words, I don't know. And plus it's hard to say, and especially in a year with so much quarterback transitional change, which offenses are bad. I mean, do you have a good handle? Maybe that's the reason why that I've kind of I haven't focused so much on that aspect of player valuation. It's just because my degree of confidence in which teams have the good and bad quarterbacks is low. You have so many quarterbacks who are kind of aging out, and you don't know when the cliff season is going to come. Age 35 or older. And then you have so many quarterbacks who are under 25 who we really don't know if those guys are going to be good or if they're good. What is your approach to that?
Yeah, I mean, generally I do try and avoid bad offenses. That would be sort of like my guiding principle is I don't want guys on bad offenses, and if they are on a bad offense, they need to be like the guy. So an example of that would be like D.D. Westbrook. So he's not on an offense that is going to be very good, but he's right at about wide receiver 44, and I feel pretty confident that he's going to get 110, 120 targets in that offense. And he's like such a skillful player that should come with, you know, two or three long touchdowns. So a guy like that, I would be more in on. An example of a guy probably that I would not be willing to draft even super cheap would be, I don't know, you know, someone like, I'm just looking at wide receiver ADP here. Maybe someone like Paris Campbell, I haven't taken very often. He's in a good offense, but I think his role to playing time is so limited. Like, I think if you draft Paris Campbell, you're probably going to end up cutting him by week three.
Yeah, like he might be a good guy to actually pick up off waivers in the second half of the season if you see a role evolving. But I agree with you. He's the classic example of a guy who may end up being viewed as a decent pick at ADP, but the trick is it's very unlikely that the person who drafts him at ADP, even if he pops as the season progresses a little bit and offers some explosiveness and sort of, you know, in a hybrid role where maybe he's going to be getting carries from scrimmage as well, it's going to be very unlikely that original owner actually holds him through all of what are probably going to be empty weeks in the first half of the season.
Right. So I think if we're talking about avoids, the first guy that we have to talk about is, of course, Todd Gurley with the knee stuff, with Daryl Henderson. So where are you at right now with Gurley?
He was my first guy. He's a guy, and I was trying to go in like the order of the draft because I didn't want to pick a bunch of guys who, you know, nobody really wants, right? So Gurley is a guy that I'm just not comfortable drafting him anywhere. And he's also a guy that I'm not really that worried about. Players fall into, there's two ways to define a player as far as like a draft value. If you don't want to take the guy, are you still worried if like your top opponent in the league or a real smart player takes him? And I'm not that really worried about Gurley in the hands of, and I know he's been a super explosive player, and I feel like I should be worried that maybe we are overstating the arthritis and the draft, and maybe he is going to be essentially the Gurley that he had been for the year and a half prior to the knee cropping up last season.
So I think that it's sort of, I think there are sort of like binary outcomes with Gurley. I either think he's healthy and the team is going to use him like a lot of good teams use their running backs, or he just is not going to have the juice anymore. Like, I think the chances that Gurley has like an RB18 season are very low. I think he's either going to be an RB1 or a guy you just don't want to start. Like, doesn't that seem like the most likely way to describe the situation? Can you see him getting 150 carries and 45 targets? Like, that just doesn't feel very realistic.
Well, I think you're correct in what you're saying, but I think that that's mostly on a per week basis. So he may start the year as a guy that you're happy with as an RB1, but how is he going to finish the year? In other words, is it going to be similar to his path last year when you really needed him the most, he wasn't available to you, and it was the worst kind of unavailability where you had to play him anyway. Like, you couldn't even swap somebody in. Like, who was going to play? If you had, you're telling me you have Todd Gurley and he's active and you're going to be playing CJ Anderson?
Yeah, I mean, he really did put you in a difficult spot. And I mean, there's also a chance that Daryl Henderson's ADP ends up looking hilarious, right? Like if Gurley is just Gurley the way they used him last year, Henderson is very unlikely to pay off in the seventh or eighth round.
Somebody put the over under. I wish I could remember who it was, but it was a very clever question. They said 149 touches.
It was my Roto Experts companion, Anthony Amico, who tweeted this.
And what was amazing was I came into the poll late and I just wanted to see the results. So I voted. It was exactly 50-50. So that's when you know you have a really good over under. But I was uncomfortable either way on that, to be honest with you. So I would
probably, with the way that I've been drafting Gurley, like, I've just been avoiding him even in the second round. And I the third round, I think, is where you really have the decision with Gurley, because at that point you probably have two players that you really like. And you're probably, if you have two guys you really like, you're probably thinking, okay, you know, in the third round, do I want to take Leonard Fournette? No, I probably would rather have Gurley. Do I want to take Derrick Henry? Like, I think that range is where you actually have a decision on.
But he's never going to last that long, though. Would you agree? I mean, I would say that maybe there's like a less than 10% chance that he lasts past the early second round.
He's really starting to slip in the like the competitive best balls.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah. That's interesting. I wonder if it would be different for people who are drafting in just like an annual league where
I think in those, yeah, I think in those casual leagues, I think he's much more likely to be something like a second round pick. Like, it's hard for me to imagine in a casual league him going significantly later than that.
And that may not be a product of the degree of expertise of the players in the league. It could be just a function of the ability to make transactions. And you figure if something goes wrong, you know, you can figure out a plan B, or maybe you could even draft Gurley knowing that you'll just handcuff him.
Yeah.
Which, like, and I'm usually against handcuffs, but this is a case where the handcuff makes a tremendous amount of sense.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. So going a little bit further down the list, I wanted to know what you had on Derrick Henry, because I think, much like Gurley, I think his ADP is either way too high or way too low. Because if he plays like he did for the first 12 weeks last year, RB17 is way too high. If they put Lewis back on the bench, RB17 is way too low. If I had assurances they would use him like they used him the last 4 weeks, I would take him over Mac. I would take him over Aaron Jones. I would take him over Fournette. And I would maybe even start to think about taking him over like Chubb or Dalvin Cook.
He was like off of my radar completely. I just was not going to take him. Then I looked at his stats after somebody in the best ball of death drafted him at the second and third round turn. And I was like, really, Henry? And then I did an MFL subsequently, and I got him in the early at the third and fourth round turn, essentially, because I was picking 11th. So I kind of think, if you could get him in the early fourth round, late third round, that's reasonable. I'm really not comfortable pushing him up into the the turn in the second and third rounds. So to me, he's more of a top 40 player and not a top 30 player.
Yeah, that makes sense. So who's the first guy that you have on your list as an avoid?
You know, I hate picking on Melvin Gordon, but I am yards focused, and I know that Gordon has the touchdown secret sauce in this San Diego, Los Angeles offense.
But maybe not with Hunter Henry back, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, he's underrated injury prone because he suffers his injuries at a point of the season where we don't notice them that much. His owners certainly notice them when he's not available to them in the playoffs, but he doesn't have the reputation of being somebody who's injury prone. But the other thing, in addition to, that saving him games where if the same injuries that had occurred earlier, he would be flagged for that. What's unavoidable is he's got a lot of wear and tear on his body. He had microfracture surgery after his rookie year. He's had a variety of knee injuries. He's only been over 1,000 yards 1 year. Am I correct with that? Like, I think that's like an amazing bit of trivia with Melvin Gordon. In an era where 1,000 yards isn't even a big deal, he's only cracked 1,000 yards once.
I'm fact-checking you real quick. Wow, that is true. So he's had over 1,000 combo yards more times, but only 1,000 rushing yards once.
And this is, I'm interested in your take on this because philosophically for me, like, I definitely want my running back to be involved in the passing game, but I want a really high bettable floor in rushing yardage as well. Like, I think that's sort of the bread and butter, you know, and the other things are the gravy. Like, definitely you want the goal line touchdowns. Definitely you would like a guy who's very much involved in the passing game, since those touches are so much more valuable than rushes. But I really do like a very high and confident projectable level of rushing yards to start a running back ADP in the top six. And I just can't get there with Gordon.
I have not taken him yet. Maybe I've taken him once or twice. I would have to go look in my best balls, but I know for a fact that I probably have opted to start going for wide receivers there. And in my overall rankings, I have like Hopkins, Michael Thomas, Odell Beckham, and Smith-Schuster all over him. Like, for me, I do think that Saquon, Elliott, McCaffrey, and Kamara are the top tier. Actually, probably put David Johnson in there as well. And then the tier with Gordon, Le'Veon Bell, James Conner, Joe Mixon, then that tier starts.
And I of that tier, I like Bell and Mixon. Mixon just because of his great ability and the fact that he probably is going to have very good market share in that offense in both rushing and receiving. And I like Bell just because I think we're kind of underrating the Jets offense a little bit, and it's not as much of a drag, I think, on his expected value as the market believes.
Man, I don't know. I am undecided on Le'Veon Bell. I know, of course, that you're very high on the Jets. My concerns are not with Darnold, actually. My concerns are pretty much all related to Gase and the pace of that offense.
That's very reasonable. The pace of the offense is probably something that's just part of his DNA. Although you would like to see, maybe the quarterback has a little bit of a role in that. Like, if he could just, you know, process things more quickly, maybe the team doesn't have to take as much time, you know, looking at the defense at the line of scrimmage and either getting in or out of an audible. I'm not sure about that. I don't know if that's a function necessarily of coaching or of quarterback. It's like when they say, oh, this quarterback, you know, the Gase system throws a lot of underneath passes and a lot of passes short of the sticks, like one of the highest percentages in the league. Is that Gase or is that, you know, his quarterbacks?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think probably a big part of it is Gase. Like, it seems like other than the Peyton Manning year, his offenses were very slow.
Right. But he does have the experience in the Peyton Manning year, so you know maybe he's confident with Darnold. But I think
I'm not quite sure Darnold is at that level yet. Maybe he'll get there, but I'm pretty sure he's not there yet.
No, but what I mean is maybe he has confident maybe has the confidence in Darnold to put more on his plate and to not, you know, try to slow things down a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Who's the next guy on your list?
This is similar to Gordon, Jarvis Landry, man. Like he,
yeah, I'm out.
I mean, I just can't see it. Once Mayfield became the starter last year and Kitchens took over the offense, Landry was kind of like an afterthought. I mean, he was just like a guy, like, and he's not a good bet for yardage. And I just don't know really what the target floor is. Like, I'm a little bit worried about Beckham for the same reason. Like, I don't know how it's going to shake out. On paper, it would seem like Landry's role is going to maybe be amplified because he's going to be the easier targeted player on most plays if you assume that defenses are going to focus mostly on Beckham. So, I mean, I could see a scenario where it's just so easy to throw to Landry that he ends up with more targets than Beckham, but he's been relatively inefficient. His yardage is never good. I mean, can you project him for 1,000 receiving yards even?
He might be close. I'll go pull up our projections right now. I'm assuming he's probably lower than that. The issue to me is that Landry's efficiency decreases when his average depth of target goes up. And I'm really expecting Beckham to get a lion's share of the targets, right? Like I don't think that this is going to be a scenario where Jarvis Landry walks into 160 targets again.
Yeah, the Duke Johnson situation could help Landry and the wide receivers in general because, you know, if he's going to be traded or not on the team, then I don't think that they're going to really have a top-end receiving option in the passing game. I'm not saying that Chubb can't actually, you know, he'll catch, he'll get catches. I don't think he's, you know, Alfred Morris, but I can't see them emphasizing him in the passing game by design. So that maybe will help the receivers because the market share last year, once they made the coaching change, was pretty unfriendly for wide receivers. It was not a heavily targeted wide receiver passing offense with Kitchens.
So the projection that we have for Landry is 96 targets, 757 yards, and 4.5 receiving touchdowns.
Oh my God.
And that's like with giving him, I think, like maybe like an 18% market share of the offense.
And smart guys are happily targeting him in like the sixth round. I've seen him go in the fifth round. I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. Where are you on Mayfield? Pass attempts, you know, he was only at like a 525 pace with Kitchens and they were 5-3. If you assume that they're going to win 10 games, game script is not going to be his friend in terms of passing attempts. And they have a really good back and running game. And they have presumably an offensive play caller who wants to run the ball. So I think that that's where there's huge variance in projections. And I'm curious as to where you are on Mayfield.
So we have 554 passing attempts for Mayfield, 31.9 passing touchdowns, 4,434 yards. We're giving a lot of credence to Freddie Kitchens and but more so Todd Monken. Monken made that offense in Tampa Bay last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston, the third best.
That was like an all-time YPA offense there.
Right. And I think Mayfield is better than both of those guys.
And it's kind of fascinating that, you know, and it's concerning if you're somebody who's betting on Jameis Winston in that offense, which in the Tampa Bay offense with Arians, who's also similar to Monken, like a downfield thrower. It's very alarming that Fitzpatrick was so much better in YPA. Like, I don't know if there's ever been two quarterbacks in NFL history who have a similar sample of pass attempts who had that much variance on the same team in the same offense. I mean, 2 yards of YPA is enormous. You never see that.
Was that adjusted yards per attempt as well or just straight YPA?
Straight YPA.
Okay, I'm going to go look up the adjusted yards per attempt difference. Still pretty big. Jameis 7.3, Fitzpatrick 8.8, so 1.5 adjusted yards per attempt.
I mean, that's, you know, That's a big problem. But I can't see anybody drafting Landry. The other guy, and the next wide receiver, and this is actually a guy who'd be drafted earlier, but and maybe this is because I like Tyler Boyd so much, and we had him last year in the Stopa League. And so, you know, I don't want to sort of box myself out of getting Boyd by taking Green, but I just don't even like Green in a vacuum. Like, even if you told me, listen, you're not going to get Boyd. Somebody likes Boyd more than you. They're going to draft him higher than you would. I still don't think I would take Green.
Yeah. I mean, I have not taken Boyd. I'm on the opposite side of that. I just think that the offense will probably drift away from him this year. I kind of like taking Ross later in drafts.
Boy, now that's almost like a pocket pick. Like, you could take that guy. Where's he going? Maybe round 15 at the earliest?
I mean, he doesn't even go most of the time. So yeah. on Fantasy Pros ADPs, wide receiver 98, 295th overall.
That's a ballsy move to bet on Ross. I mean, he was a 9th overall pick. He does have speed. He did have the 7 touchdowns on, like, what was it, like 21 catches or 20 something ridiculous, right?
Yeah, he had 7 touchdowns on like 55 targets.
Yeah, but and hardly any catches. Like, you know, even if he was converting the targets efficiently, you could maybe buy a little bit of exaggerated TD efficiency as being somewhat predictive more than descriptive, but he was so bad at converting targets, it makes no sense that he was good at converting red zone targets.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just total, like, fluky luck variance that was able to happen for him. But I do think that if you just look at profiles of guys to bet on, you'd go, you know, first round pick, fastest 40 time in the history of the combine, new offensive coordinator, like, that would be a guy to try and buy low on.
Right. But the argument against him would be, this is a guy who was only that high of a pick because of speed. And, you know, as you know, there's really the problem with wide receivers and all the spark and combine stuff is there's nothing really that proves to be predictive as far as the individual tests, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I still weight the stuff. I still would prefer guys who are athletic over guys who are not athletic.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and plus, pretty much everybody who gets drafted is athletic to some degree. I'm interested why you're off Boyd. Like, he was sort of our secret weapon last year, and I think he's, especially in Dynasty, like, I might actually push him up to, like, a top 10 receiver.
I just think that he's really being drafted at his ceiling because he is, you know, he is the slot guy, and with Tyler Eifert back, I don't think, like, as long as Eifert is healthy, I don't really see him being like the red zone guy. So I sort of feel like he's kind of priced at his ceiling in drafts right now.
And what do you think of him as a player? Just as far as like his true skill level, is he somebody that you're down on as far as talent or is he somebody that you like as far as the,
no, I like his talent. I think that he's a good player. I liked him a lot as a prospect and I was sort of surprised to see how long he floundered, but I wasn't surprised by his breakout particularly.
It'd be interesting to see these guys who have these later breakouts. For him, I guess it was his third year, right? And that would be the theory, I guess, if you're taking Ross, you're looking for a similar third-year breakout. I wonder if once a guy breaks out, does he stay broken out? In other words, like another guy that I could think of like this historically was Eric Moulds, who broke out, like did nothing initially, then had a huge breakout, and then was a really good player for a number of years.
Yeah, I mean, that's too far back past my range. I don't know.
The next guy on the list, Sony Michel for me, is somebody I want no part of. Like, that Damian Harris pick just completely screws up, like, any ability that I have to figure out what their plan is in that backfield.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the upside with Sony was all him finding a way to get into a pass-catching role, and I just don't really see that. I just don't see, like, is there any way he ends up being a pass-catcher this year? I don't think so.
They seem to – I wrote an article for 538 last year about the Patriots running game, and what was hilarious about it and almost, like, inconceivable is that when they had, they were basically telling you exactly what they were going to do. Like when White was on the field, they passed 80% of the time. When Michelle was on the field, they ran 80% of the time, and they were getting away with it. You know, and the guy that you didn't know, the wild card running back, was when Burkhead was on the field, they really showed no tendency. So you would think that White just has that passing role locked in. Like they'll just put him on the field if they want to pass. And since teams aren't overloading to stop that, like in a poker sense, when you know whether the guy's bluffing or not, why would they stop doing what they have been doing?
So I think there's like a decent chance from what I've heard that that Burkhead is going to get cut.
Yeah, I would think that too. But then I was hearing somebody was reporting from New England about how the only guys with guaranteed roles in the Patriots offense are White and Burkhead. And I was like, Burkhead? How does Burkhead have a guaranteed role?
I mean, I don't know. I just think the move with Patriots running backs is always avoid the overpriced ones and draft the cheap ones. So this year you're drafting Damian Harris and Rex Burkhead.
Right. And like, if they like Michelle, why did they draft Harris?
I don't know. I mean, I do think they do just want to run the air out of the ball this year. Tom Brady's 42.
Oh, I'm totally in agreement there. And they definitely do want to run the ball a lot. They had a lot of success with that last year. It's going to be interesting to see if they could replicate that success without Gronkowski, who kind of put teams in a pickle where, you know, they had to obviously respect the pass, but he was such a great run blocker. What's really interesting, like the people who get on the Jets for spending all the money on Bell, the Patriots spend more money on running backs than the Jets still.
Yeah. I mean, the Patriots, they think that they've solved the game by zigging when everyone else is zagging. And I do think not having Gronkowski is going to be a pretty big deal for them.
Here's a guy we're going to disagree on. Corey Davis want no part of that. Okay, this is my bad offense and bad quarterback. I just have no faith in Mariota. Like, I kind of like Mariota periodically when he's healthy, but the thing about Mariota that nobody factors in is YPA is great, or good at least, usually. And that's usually the set that I look at the most. But, boy, his sack rate. Sacks are largely a quarterback stat, in my opinion. And when you get sacked at the rate that he gets sacked at, and they have Tannehill, who's also over 11% sacks. 11% sacks. Like, people don't realize sacks stop 84% of drives. Even when you get sacked on first down, your rate of getting a first down on that set of downs is cut by more than a half. I think you go from 76% to like 28 or 29%. So it's almost like a third. Just, you know, the ability to just get another first down on that drive. That's how crushing and drive killing sacks are.
Yeah, we do disagree on this one. Not that I am a Corey Davis backer, but I do think that when Mariota's in there, the offense should theoretically be like, you know, maybe kind of close to league average. And I like a lot of their pass catchers. I thought the A.J. Brown selection was pretty good. They'll have Delanie Walker back. Jonnu Smith is another one of those like athletic prospect type of guys. Deion Lewis, good pass catching running back. Derrick Henry, relatively efficient running back. So I think that if Corey Davis is able to get like a 22 to 24% target share of that offense, I think he's like probably a better value than taking Christian Kirk, who's wide receiver 34 right behind him.
Yeah, and so what's your projection for Davis?
I'll pull that up right now. It's a little bit better than I thought. 108 targets, 864 yards, but a really low touchdown rate because of what we're projecting overall for that offense to score per game.
Yeah, and I think this is an offense that's always going to underachieve some of the more advanced metrics like, you know, yards per play or YPA, where yards per pass play is going to be much lower than YPA. And that's going to be a drag on the offense because a lot of drives, similar to like when you throw an interception, a lot of drives are just going to die.
Yeah, I mean, that seems fair. Like, I don't want to bang the table for Corey Davis, but he's a guy I'm fine taking as my third or fourth wide receiver.
And then I had and this is a guy that he helped me win the Evans league, that Havos league. So you would think that I would like him, Dante Pettis.
But no, man, zero interest.
Pettis had like hardly any targets. He was leveraging them insanely. And now there's way better wide receivers on the team. So I'm just out of Pettis, like, completely. I never even think of him before he goes.
Yeah, no, I have no interest in taking him. He, like, profiles as, like, a slot-only guy, and George Kittle is really their slot wide receiver.
Yeah, and plus, now they got, through the draft, they got Samuel, right? So,
And the other guy, the Jalen
Hurd. Yeah, the Hurd, who's, like, sort of like a hybrid, right? They don't know if he's a running back or a wide receiver. He could be a little bit of both, but he's 6'4". Like, how could a guy that tall get the ball from scrimmage? But I don't know what they're going to do with Hurd. But, you know, I sort of like you. Where are you on Debo? Like, as far as like Dynasty, for example.
Dynasty, I like him. I think I have him as like an early second round pick, which is a little bit higher than the market, but I think it was like a pretty good landing spot. And I like him better than Pettis. So I think he probably fits that, like, he can play on the outside too. So I think he's probably just like a better fit for all that weird stuff that Shanahan likes to run, especially as long as they don't, like, you know, they don't have a real wide receiver one. They have Kittle and then a bunch of guys.
Plus, I remember, when we were team tall wide receiver, then we kind of both realized that it was more team big wide receiver.
Well, they changed the rules on us, right? Like, team big wide receiver used to be the way to go, and then they changed the rules on how you could defend guys, and then slot, like, smaller, quicker slot guys became what you wanted.
But don't you want a bigger bodied guys too? Like, he's kind of a big bodied guy, like, sort of like he's built more like an Anquan Boldin, isn't he?
Yeah. He like looks like a running back. Like, he's like, he's 6 feet tall, but he's 215 pounds.
So your model still likes that, right? Like, you like that kind of body mass as a wide receiver, just for the ability to kind of like box out and contest a little bit, right?
Yeah, I still like guys with some physicality. Like, that's still going to project well for me.
The next guy's a running back. I can't imagine that you'd be in on him. I'm amazed that he even gets drafted at all, but I guess you have to. But LeSean McCoy, like,
yeah, no, haven't taken him yet and won't.
The circus has left town, man. So how are you playing the Buffalo running game? Because the thing about it is there's a lot of opportunity there. Because as you know, when you have a guy that can threaten, the containment for read option fakes, that just opens up the running game so much. It should add 0.5 to 1.0 yards per carry to a back versus what he would, gain in a more standard offense. So I think that that's a real fertile rushing offense. So how are you playing the Buffalo running game? Are you like Yeldon, or are you looking at what is Devin Singletary?
Yeldon is the guy that I have taken, but I think that it just might be one of those headache backfields where you just don't like any of them, or none of them end up being great.
Well, or it could just be like attrition, because Yeldon can never stay healthy, even in the limited role. McCoy is always hurt, and he's on the circus's left town, right, for McCoy. So it could almost be like by default that you would take Singletary. Like, maybe he'll just be the last man standing by like week five.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Yeldon is like a good pass catcher, right? So like, he has that over Singletary, and I just don't even know if they'll play McCoy. Like, McCoy just might not make the team.
Yeah, to me, that would be the least surprising of the quote-unquote surprising cuts in the late summer, would be if the Bills just cut McCoy.
Yeah, would not be surprising. So some other later-ish guys that I'm just not taking at all, Carlos Hyde, no real interest for me. I just don't see it.
Why exactly?
I just think it's clearly Damian Williams' backfield, and Hyde is like in the best balls. Hyde goes in like the ninth round.
I know.
He goes like he's like a real player, which he's not.
What do you think of the – they have a they drafted somebody, right?
Like in the sixth round? Darwin Thompson, who a lot of, like, scout guys like.
He's like Chris Thompson, isn't he?
Yeah, basically. Maybe weighs a little bit more.
That could be a real valuable role. Like, that could be a very sneaky – I wrote an article for The Athletic where I write fantasy about how there's, like, 0-0 running backs this year. Like, in other words, those guys that were just like, oh, it's Chris Thompson. You could get him in, like, the ninth round. Like, who are those guys? It just doesn't seem like there are the textbook zero running back was always, hey, he's the receiving back, and he'll get a few carries. But if there's an injury, his role will elevate into something really valuable.
So there are like four guys. There's Ito Smith, Jalen Samuels, Nyheim Hines, and I think still Giovanni Bernard.
But do you think that if there was an injury to Connor, wouldn't they just go with Snell? Like, they drafted him to be a between-the-tackle runner. Like, I know he's got horrible spark, but they must like him. See, what people don't realize is that when a team drafts a guy, they don't think that he's worth that pick. They think he's way better than that pick.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. The Steelers do like him, and there's already been three or four like puff pieces about Snell from camp about how good he's looked and how much the team likes him.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know about Ito Smith for sure. He's definitely the old school. Like, you could feel, but the thing is, he was so inefficient last year that could scare you a little bit. But it's not scaring you.
No, not at all.
But yeah, I would agree that Ito Smith is the guy where you could always get him in like the ninth or 10th round or even later. And you could feel really good that he's going to have some kind of a floor, and he's got the ceiling with an injury of being, you know, a top 15 back.
Yeah. Ito probably is one of the guys I've drafted most often this offseason.
Right.
Like, he feels like a lock to me.
And you would go Ito over Singletary.
Singletary, no interest. He profiles horribly.
Right. Here's a guy that we both have liked in the past, and we've both owned him in the Stopa League, but I'm sorry, I'm out. Emmanuel Sanders. Like, I can't.
No, completely done. Haven't taken him at all. I take Hamilton a lot.
I don't care, like, how well the reports are about your recovery from – it's an Achilles tear, man.
And
like,
he's old and small.
And speed was his game. Like, if he comes back, it would be a miracle. Like, why bet on a miracle?
Yeah.
Even a small bet on a miracle is stupid.
Yeah. I don't have any interest at all.
And this guy burned me and maybe you last year, but I can't believe anybody takes Adrian Peterson. Like, seriously, I would not take Peterson at the end of, like, a 14-team auction for $1. I would find a better option.
I've probably taken him in a couple best balls, but I don't really like him. I guess more just I'm not really in on Geis. I think Geis is probably like fool's gold.
Yeah. And then both the running backs are – the Redskins only draft running backs who have bad knees, it seems like. Don't they have – everybody in their backfield has had a major knee surgery? Is that true?
Thompson, Peterson, Geis, yeah, they've all torn their ACL.
And Love,
yeah, he tore his ACL as well.
Yeah, like, catastrophically, some of these injuries as well. So, that's weird. That's funny, isn't it? The Redskins, man, you know, they're in their own world over there. But that was pretty much it as far as the guys. I am more of a, it's never the player, it's the price kind
right.
of a guy.
Yeah.
But these are guys that seriously, like, even if I think that they're sliding a little bit, I would probably think of something else. Like Gordon, say Gordon slid, Bell was off the board, and Gordon's there with, like, the 10th pick. I think I still might take Hopkins.
Yeah, the guys that I'm more firm about not taking are, like, guys who just don't have any ceiling, like later on in the draft. Like, what is Emmanuel Sanders' ceiling at this point? Like, I just don't see it with him.
Exactly. That's the mistake that people make in those middle, even starting in the middle rounds, but definitely in the late rounds. You want to be drafting ceilings because you got to figure the churn rate of those guys, the base rate of churning those guys, and obviously it's different in best ball, so maybe there's a different strategy.
If you're later round picks in best ball, you really want to be targeting upside because theoretically by the time you're making your 14th, 15th, 16th picks, you should have a bunch of solid guys. So you want to be looking for guys who can win the league for you, not give you 8 points.
So a guy like that for me that I take in almost all the best balls is Funchess, who like everybody hates. He's still young. He's on a team that just cannot stop throwing touchdown passes. They're like designed to throw touchdown passes. Luck is extremely prolific in that regard. And he's a red zone guy. He's never been with a quarterback, in my opinion, who, you know, can really create wide receiver value or receiving value from nothing. And I don't know. I know that he's not a guy who pops off the chart in any way as far as his physical traits, but he does have size.
Yeah, I like Funchess. A guy I've taken late a lot are the Buffalo guys, John Brown and Robert Foster, because I'm pretty certain they'll both have, you know, they'll each have weeks of long touchdowns.
Absolutely. That's the only thing Allen can do.
Yeah, so those are like examples. And then I actually am more likely to draft handcuff running backs in best ball than I am in standard because, you know, if Dalvin Cook goes down, Alex Mattison, boom, RB1.
Oh, I love Mattison, man. And that's why that's – here, you know, Cook is a guy – I can see drafting him, though, so I do respect the talent. But I think he is not suffering any – consequence as of yet for his inability to stay healthy through his first two seasons.
Yeah, and it will come eventually. You know, his backup last year, Latavius, I mean, he's fine, but Mattison like has younger, fresher legs.
And if you look at the and everybody looks good on the YouTube videos, right? But this guy's got some moves. He's not strictly a power runner. He does have that physicality to his game, but he can also make guys miss in space.
Well, you got to take into account the fact that he wasn't even playing, you know, like the Boise State's in the Mountain West, right?
Right.
So he was not playing anyone who was any good?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for the players that we are thinking about avoiding this year, at least at their current cost. Tell people about what you have going on over at The Athletic, Mike.
So, fantasy baseball and fantasy football, I write a few columns a week, but now they're the football column that I usually write on Fridays, even in the off season, those are being held for the draft kit that's going to be coming out. So they're going to hit you with like 100 articles all at once. It's like an incredible team of writers at The Athletic. Like you get a ridiculous amount of content. And I also am still writing periodically for the Wall Street Journal and 538. And I also do this is kind of cool, you know, byline. But you know, I already have all that byline sort of juice for the resume, but so this is something that's just like a labor of love, but I write the backs of the baseball cards, and I also did a set of tennis cards for Tops, which is like
that is cool,
a childhood dream come true. Yeah,
that is really cool. All right, well, everyone make sure to check out Mike's stuff on The Athletic and at 538, and we will be back next week.